3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Good morning, listeners. You are tuned into Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. Good morning, Inez.
Good morning. Happy NAIDOC Week, everybody.
Yes, happy NAIDOC Week. And I hope that people have been staying tuned to 3CR on 855 AM for our live prison broadcasts running during NAIDOC Week from the 7th to the 11th of July. Today, we're going to be broadcasting out of Marketing. So really hope that folks are tuned in. It is one of the most unique radio broadcasts, I feel like, on the radio calendar, which is also the regular calendar. But just, you know, being able to have First Nations hosts go in to prisons around so-called Victoria and actually speak to Mob Inside during NAIDOC Week and broadcast their voices to the broader community. You know, these are folks that we would never hear from otherwise.
Absolutely. And listening to Beyond the Bars for so many years now, it's just so wonderful, like, how diverse the broadcasting is. Like, you'll hear such an important story about connection and then maybe, like, the funniest joke you've ever heard. So I really enjoy listening to it. And actually, it's 50 years of NAIDOC Week this year.
Yes, 50 years of NAIDOC Week, 24 years of Beyond the Bars.
Wow, yeah. Incredible.
So next week, we're coming up to a quarter century of doing these really special broadcast. Yeah, and we're going to be playing a little bit of yesterday's broadcast in our show today, but maybe we'll take you through what we've got on. So do you want to start us off, Inez?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's with a content note that the segment includes discussion of a First Nations person who has died in custody. First Nations listeners can always call 13-YARN-13-9276 or Yarning Safe and Strong on 1-800-959-563. And we'll play a speech by Munungjali and South Sea Islander healthcare worker and researcher Chelsea Watergo at the Mugajun rally on June 9th, demanding justice for Kumunjai White, a young Warrapoo man who was killed by off-duty police at a Coles supermarket in Mpantwe, Alice Springs, in late May this year. Chelsea is introduced by the Radio Reversal crew, or thanks to Radio Reversal crew, and Sam Watson.
Yeah, and we are then going to play a recording from yesterday's Beyond the Bars special at Middleton Prison, where Ty Hammersley, Brent Watkins, Freddie Norris, and Amos Roach honored 24 years of NAIDOC broadcasting with guests Zach and Brad. And they talked about the importance of lifting up the younger generation and the realities of accessing cultural needs while incarcerated.
And then we'll hear a two-part segment from Kimberly Benjamin, who is a Yawara, a Badi and Kija woman from Rubibi or Broome, and proudly living and working on country. Kimba joined me yesterday to discuss directing, filmmaking of SBS and NITV shows Our Medicine, as well as episodes of Warm Props. Now, Our Medicine is a beautiful, incredible six-part series. Behind-the-scenes look showcasing back excellence from across the country, following First Nations medical trailblazers and traditional healers who through their work, care and knowledge are making change and having positive impacts on community. And also, Warm Props is a drama caught between set life and home life and being thrust back into the hometown of Broome. So we really discuss the differences between these shows, how important healing is and what it means to be a First Nations filmmaker.
Amazing. I'm really looking forward to hearing that. And finally, we are joined by Gunai Gunditjmara and Jabiroong Senator Lydia Thorpe, who is going to discuss the implications of the Yuruk Justice Commission's final reports, including its finding of genocide, as well as Australia's international human rights obligations in relation to Palestine, with a focus on Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese's new report, From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide. And Senator Thorpe is also going to share some reflections on NAIDOC Week 2025. You are listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and we will be back with you shortly with the news headlines.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars Prison broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2025. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 AM from Monday the 7th through to Friday the 11th of July. We'll be taking you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Philip Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Middleton Prison, Marguerite Correctional Centre, and Port Phillip Prison. We'll be connecting with culture and community. There'll be stories, songs, opinions, and poems from the men and women inside. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR digital and streaming via our website, or on the Community Radio Plus app. Head to the website 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2025 for more information.
These are the news headlines for Thursday, the 10th of July. With a warning for First Nations listeners, the first headline contains mention of First Nations person who has died recently. Findings from the coronial inquest into the shooting death of Kumanjai Walker, which were delayed more than 2 years, were finally handed down earlier this week. The inquest found that former Northern Territory police officer Zachary Rolfe, who fatally shot 19-year-old Kumanjai Walker in Yimdamu in 2019, was racist and used unnecessary force in multiple prior arrests. The coroner described Kumanjai Walker's death as a case of, quote, officer-induced jeopardy, end quote, and said Rolfe's repeated use of force, his dehumanisation of Aboriginal people, and his disregard for arrest protocols all contributed to the fatal shooting. Kumanjai Walker's family and community say the findings confirm long-held knowledge of and experiences with systemic racism in Northern Territory Police, and have renewed calls for structural change and accountability. Also this week, Israeli soldiers killed and injured hundreds of Palestinians in the past 24 hours across Gaza, as Palestinian authorities warn that the fuel crisis caused by the Israeli blockade is reaching a catastrophic point. The Israeli and United States-run Gaza Humanitarian Foundation Fund continues to control aid distribution and has this week closed a major distribution point in central Gaza, meaning Palestinians in desperate need of food aid are forced to make dangerous journey to the remaining operational sites in southern Gaza. The closure of the central Gaza distribution center also raises concerns about Israel's forced movement of Palestinians to southern Gaza, where they are attempting to form a so-called humanitarian city amongst the ruins of Rafah. Palestinians continue to resist this forced displacement, saying they will never be relocated there. In the West Bank, Israeli forces arrested two Palestinians fighting against illegal Israeli settlements, while at the same time moving mobile houses into other areas controlled by the Palestinian Authority.
In so-called Australia, advocates are condemning attempts by politicians and media to smear and criminalise peaceful pro-Palestine protests in NARM. This comes as legal experts criticise the Allen government's proposed crackdowns with a new suite of anti-protest laws that would criminalise face coverings, including face masks worn for health and religious or cultural reasons, as well as ban demonstrations near places of worship. A Human Rights Law Centre spokesperson said the measures will not prevent hate crimes, but instead threaten civil liberties and fuel division. Activists leading some of the protests being misrepresented by politicians and the media are speaking out to give context to the escalating nature of protest action, including the torching of three vehicles at Lovett Technologies over the weekend. Protesters say the actions at the site of the weapons manufacturer were not thoughtless vandalism, but were taken in protest against Lovett as the first producer in the country of F-35 fighter jet components. And F-35s are deployed by Israel in their ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people. And finally in headlines, a former Royal Australian Air Force personnel member has broken her 15-year silence about a sexual abuse cover-up in the Australian Defence Force, revealing that she was harassed at knife point by a senior corporal and then silenced through an out-of-court settlement. Supported by the Human Rights Law Centre's Whistleblower Project, Julia Delaforce is sharing her story, highlighting how her attempt to seek justice led to the loss of her career and lasting trauma. Her case reignites urgent calls for a federal whistleblower protection authority to ensure survivors of abuse and those exposing institutional wrongdoing are protected rather than punished. Now, if you need to speak with anybody about feelings that have arisen from this last headline, you can always call Lifeline on 131114. That's 131114. And you can also call 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732. That's 1-800-737-732. Now, these have been the news headlines for Thursday, the 10th of July, and you're listening to 3CR 855 AM. I wanted to add a couple more announcements. One of that is that this week actually marks 25 years of BDS. It's the 25th anniversary of the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions campaign that has been led by Palestinians and has called for worldwide solidarity and civil society action to put pressure on the state of Israel and its illegal occupation of Palestinian territory and basically call for international solidarity. It's a massive milestone and there's a huge amount of work to be done, but we are seeing some wins with the campaign, including in the Mask Off Maersk campaign, where we've seen dock workers in Greece and in France also refuse to process shipping of weapons components and basically unloading and loading of Maersk shipping routes. But yeah, it is a long arc of struggle. And the other announcement that I wanted to make, which is not really an announcement, is Queensland won the State of Origin last night.
Oh my God, woo, woo, woo.
Yeah, I'm not even from Queensland, but I'm very invested. I know that Tommy Dearden won Best on Ground, but honourable mention to the Hammer, Hamiso Tabuai-Fido, who had an incredible game. And also, what a debut for Gehemat Shibasaki, who was incredible, absolutely staunch. I hope he remains a lineup for Queensland State of Origin team for a long time to come. Now, we will be back to you in a moment with our first segment for today. Stay tuned. You're listening to 3CR 855 AM. You might be listening on your radio. You could be listening to 3CR Digital as well. Or you could be streaming via 3cr.org.au/streaming. There are so many ways to listen to 3CR. You can also download the Community Radio Plus app. So really, no excuse to not be listening to us all the time. We will be back with you shortly.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey.
I'm Alphonse.
I'm Erwin.
And we are from the Voice of West Papua.
Tuesday, 6:30 until 7:30 p.m.
News and music from West Papua.
It is 7:14 in the morning and you're listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. Now, we are going to play a speech by Mananjali and South Sea Islander health worker and researcher Chelsea Wadigo at the Maganjin rally on June 9th that demanded justice for Kumanjai White, a young Walpiri man who was killed by off-duty police at a Coles supermarket in Mbantwa Alice Springs in late May this year. Chelsea is introduced by Wanjeriburra and Birigubba man Sam Watson. And this segment does include discussion of a First Nations person who has died in custody. So for dedicated support, First Nations listeners can call 13YARN on 139276. That's 139276. Or Yarning Safe and Strong on 1-800-959-563. Our thanks to Anna Carlson and the Radio Reversal crew at 4ZZZ Community Radio for sharing this recording with us.
In the last 2 years, a lot of us here today have stood shoulder to shoulder with the Palestinian community. I wanted to acknowledge this because there's a lot of people who've been coming to those protests who are here today to show that solidarity back. And I want to make a point that if colonial states are allowed to kill children in the tens of thousands in Palestine with our government's support, then they think that they can get away with killing Indigenous children here too. And if they can get away with killing Indigenous children here too, then they can get away with supporting the genociders all over the world. If we want to stop these colonial states from brutalizing Indigenous people and Indigenous children, it starts wherever you are. It starts with whatever movement demands your solidarity at the time. And someone who's been really good at taking that solidarity from a sentiment to an action is our next speaker, Chelsea Wadigo. Chelsea is a South Sea Islander, a Mananjali woman, and I want to welcome her to the stage now. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. I want to acknowledge the unceded sovereignty of the Turrbal and Yuggera people, and as a Mananjali and South Sea Islander woman, for the Wadigo, Williams and Slocky families, I want to extend my deepest condolences and sympathies to Walpuri for the tragic loss of Commonjoe White and also Commonjoe Walker, whose inquest findings would have been announced next week. Their long wait for justice has been deferred for yet another injustice. I also want to extend my condolences to all the black fellas here who are grieving the loss of their loved ones at the hand of the state. And thank you for sharing your story and calling us to action. As we gather here today, we must make sense of this violence. We can use this opportunity to understand how racial violence works in this place, how it is possible that a black man can be killed in the Isle of Coles in Reconciliation Week. We must too remember that racial violence does not just come down the barrel of a gun or a knee on the neck. It comes in many forms. Racial violence manifests itself in the criminalization and hyper-incarceration of black men, women and children. Racial violence manifests itself in the dehumanization that denies our people the most basic conditions for living. Racial violence manifests in how the state distributes its resources, where they build more prisons while underfunding our legal services that try and keep us out of there. Racial violence manifests in the building of infrastructure for mining companies while refusing to build schools in those black regions. Racial violence manifests everywhere in this place. It is what this nation was built on. It is not about, like Dr. Nixon said, the lone wolf, the bad apple, or one racist copper, off duty or on duty. The perpetrator is the state and all of its agents. They all have black blood on their hands. Kevin called us to think about solidarity as an action. I want us to think about our own actions and how we might be complicit. In what way, as we as black fellas benefiting from the racial violence being visited upon our own people every day and everywhere? When we go to work on Monday, do we invest our labour in fighting for justice, or do we spend it entrenching and enforcing black compliance with the state? Closing the gap has failed our people, failed longer than ATSIC ever did. So why are we still calling for a refresh of the targets The target must be the state as perpetrator. And surely, as a people, we can all agree that reconciliation is dead. Reconciliation is dead. We must stop offering the perpetrators the comfort of cultural awareness and advisory committees. We must demand justice. Justice is the only remedy for our healing and for halting their violence. Now, few of you may know that this week in Maganjin was a coronial inquest of an Aboriginal woman who died in custody, this Wednesday. The inquest lasted just one day. They waited 5 years for that inquest, just one day. It took them longer to discover her dead than they investigated its circumstances. And in just one day, all of the state's agents would collude to say there was nothing that could have been done. Natural causes will be their conclusion, as with every inquest into black deaths in custody that's ever been convened in this country. But there is nothing natural about dying from a preventable condition while in the state's supposed care. There is nothing natural. There is nothing natural about being denied life-saving medical care. Every denial of access to care from birth to death is a death sentence from the state. This is state-sanctioned racial violence. Indigenous women are dying in watch houses and prison cells and disappeared from our communities. They are demonized and cast as complicit in the violence that is visited upon them. So we need you to know them. So I'm going to call up Deb Kilroy of Sisters Inside and Dr. Amy McGuire, two staunch women who invest their energy every day taking the fight to speak their names, to speak the names of the Aboriginal women who have died at the hands of the state, whose families wait for answers, who want for them to be remembered, not just of their wounds, but of their lives too.
And that was a speech by Mananjali and South Sea Islander health worker and researcher Chelsea Watego at the Maganjin rally on June 9th this year, demanding justice for Kumanjayi White, a young Walpuri man who was killed by off-duty police at a Coles supermarket in Mbanto Alice Springs in late May this year. And Chelsea was introduced by Wanjeriburra and Birriggubba man Sam Watson. Now, again, this segment did include discussion of a First Nations person who has died in custody and of black deaths in custody more broadly. So for dedicated support, First Nations listeners can call 13YARN, that is 139276. Again, 13YARN is 139276, or Yarning Safe and Strong, which is 1-800-959-563. That is 1-800-959-563. Our thanks to Anna Carlson and the Radio Reversal crew at 4ZZZ Community Radio up in Maganjin for sharing this recording with us. And also, yeah, I think just a timely moment to replay that speech, considering that this Monday was the handing down of the coroner's findings in the case, the investigation into the death in custody of Kumanjayi Walker. And, you know, thinking of Kumanjayi Walker's family and of the immense heartbreak of having to sit through months and months, through years of court proceedings to relive the death of their loved one, and to finally have this announcement made about Constable Zachary Rolfe of the Northern Territory Police being found to be racist in the coronial inquest. Also just want to mention that Kumanjayi Walker's family did postpone hearing those results because of the death in custody of Kumanjayi White. So in an act of solidarity between families and between the Walpuri community. So again, all of our solidarity goes out to them. And I wanted to play a song that I think is just perfectly on theme for NAIDOC Week this year, which is really looking towards future generations and the strength of young Aboriginal people coming up. So this is Black Nation by Emma Donovan.
And that was Black Nation by Emma Donovan, talking about Cool Flyer to promote regrowth, and really touching on 50 years of NAIDOC Week and the theme Next Generation Strength, Vision and Legacy. If you're just joining us, we also heard from a speech from the Mugindran Rally for Kumanjayi White. And now we will be joining, listening to the Beyond the Bars recording from yesterday's broadcast at Middleton Prison with Ty Hammersley, Brett Watkins, Freddie Norris and Amos Roach on a 24 years of NAIDOC broadcasting with guests Zach and Brad. They talk about the importance of lifting up the younger generation and realities of accessing cultural needs while incarcerated. Now, every year since 2001, Beyond the Bars has brought you the voices of First Nations people across so-called Victoria prison systems, and you can hear the full broadcast by going to 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2025. But for now, let's listen to yesterday. Thank you.
You're with 3CR, 8:55 a.m. We're here at Middleton Prison. Just talking to some of the lads here beyond the bars for 2025. We'll just introduce ourselves. I'm Ty Hammersley.
Brent Watkins, Gurnai, Gunai Kurnai, Wajibolik, Yamaji Noongar WA.
Freddie Norris, father Gunnishmara, mother Gunai Kurnai. So I'll fall under the Gunai Kurnai. I believe my connection to the land is through my mother. So whatever my mother is what I am.
Just found out we're cousins.
Yeah, we did that just there. We did do. He bad cuz.
Amos Roach, Nandiri Gundirima, Nilumbe Gundir Japurong. Just here today with the mob, coming in to see the guys from Middleton, Navian.
What's your name, brother?
Zach. And we're coming to you from Middleton Prison for NAIDOC Week 2025. The theme, next generation, strength, vision, legacy, you know, which sort of means a fair bit to me in a way, because up and coming, younger generation, and yeah.
That was pretty good there, brother, because I was just about to ask you that question and you just went on and you just answered the question before I could even ask it, so.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thanks, son.
What's your name, brother?
Hey, my name's Brad. This is Beyond the Bars 2025, and we're celebrating the 24 years of NAIDOC broadcast on 3CR Community Radio, and we're coming to you live from inside Middleton Prison on the land of the Dja Dja Wurrung people. And first, I'd like to pay my respects to all elders, past, present, and emerging, and thank the Dja Dja Wurrung people for the land that we're on here today. And that, and shout out to all mobs out there and all families, and hope everyone's all well and having a good day.
Thanks, brother. And where's your mob from, brother?
My mob's from Warrnambool. I'm Gunajamara, but I'm also Wathaurong. So my mob's down Warrnambool way, but I was born in Ballarat, which is Wathaurong, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get back up to, you'll go back up to Warrnambool when you get out of here?
No, back to Ballarat.
Oh, back to Ballarat.
Yeah, back to Ballarat when I get out of here, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a house there and that, and family.
Yep.
Kids, so that's the aim anyway. Back there, back to work and...
Back to life?
Yeah, back to life, back to normal life. Yeah.
Do you get time to get back to Warrnambool, back to Gunajamara country, or...?
Look, to be honest with you, I've been in and out of prison in the last, I don't know, say 14, 15 years, pretty quickly, you know what I mean? Out and then back in. But in that time, no, we haven't really gone back, there to mob back up there, you know, where my family's originally from, you know?
Life kind of dictates to you where you end up. So like life's in Ballarat, family's in Ballarat, your kids are in Ballarat.
Yeah.
So that kind of dictates where you're going to be and where you're going to go. I'm going to Shamara as well, and I would love to take my dad up back to Framlingham. That's where he grew up.
Yeah.
And but it's just finding that time today. So like, there's almost, you know, we're so busy doing this, so busy doing that, trying to achieve this, trying to achieve that, but we kind of lose that opportunity or that sense of getting back to country.
Yeah. You saying that? I'd like to take my mother back there. You know.
Yep.
Because it's her side of the family, and I'd love to go back up there. But like you said, it's everything else gets in the way of, it just in normal life, you know, your work, children at school.
It's not so much that it's, you know, more important, it's just that it just needs to be done.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got kids going to school, you've got kids' sports when they're getting older, you know. They grow up and, you know, they take preference, you know.
And especially when they've grown up in Ballarat, all their friends are in Ballarat, they're settled in Ballarat.
Yeah.
And to move them will be a little bit hard, but So hopefully one day, brother, you can get up there.
Get up there for a holiday one day for sure. With mum, take her up there for the weekend.
Maybe we'll hit up there at the same time. I'll take my dad.
Oh, that'd be all right,
That'd be all right,
I don't know.
Yeah, but I reckon too as well, one of the biggest things, you know, as a father as well, is, you know, I haven't brought my son to Gunai Kurnai country yet, but it's like that's a must to, you know, just get back to country, and that healing, not only, like, you know, your DNA, the thought of, like, you know, you've been, your ancestors have been on that land for tens of thousands of generations, and yours taking those same footsteps as your ancestors. And
well, it's the same thing. I'd like to take my son back up there as well, because he goes to St. Patrick's College in Ballarat, and they have like a contage room, which they're very supportive with the Indigenous kids there. I think there might be 35 of them or something like that. And it's a good safe spot for them, man, if they're, you know, if they're very introverted and, you know, what high school's like these days and that with, so, you know, bullies and everything else that goes on and all that. Sometimes I feel that room, it's a safe environment for them. They can go there. They've got all their table tennis tables set up. They've got a pool table, I think, in there. They sit there. They learn how to make, like, Aboriginal, like, Indigenous foods and that, you know. They might make the dampers and that. They learn a bit about bush tucker and that. And they also take them away on camps and that type of stuff, like, every couple of months, you know. They go to, like, I think a couple of rugby games a year and a couple of AFL games a year and that with the Indigenous boys and that. So it's good. So he gets right around that. So I sort of want to bring him back into that, you know.
That's good, having that sort of stuff for the kids, isn't it?
Because yeah, it's mad.
I notice, you know, with some of the kids these days, they'll say, oh, they've got ADHD or something like that. And when really that's the kind of stuff that they need, isn't it?
Yeah, they do, you know. And like I said, so, hey, like him, he's a beautiful young boy, you know what I mean? He's so nice. He's got such a good heart. But like I said, he's very introverted, man. You know, he's not the type probably to go out there in the yard and that and have 100 mates. Yeah. Like me, just talk shit to whoever, you know what I mean?
But the opposite,
but, yeah, complete opposite, you know. But so it's a good spot for him, you know. And it's the same as in prison, I think, as well, you know. Cultural stuff in prisons needed as well. There's people in here as well, man, that don't want to be out there and that and don't mix with everyone and that, but they can find a safe spot in, like, Indigenous stuff. It's and all types of cultures, you know what I mean? There might be, like, New Zealanders and Africans and Asians and all types of walks, you know what I mean? But it's a very big thing to have for people in jail, you know.
And how do you get to practice some of that culture, brother, yourself?
Well, look, we have like a program here, like a torch program, that, so a lot of the boys do paintings and that.
Yep.
And if anyone's looking out there to buy some paintings and all that, they can look online under the torch and they'll find, like, all Indigenous paintings by. It's a prisoner thing. It is. You can't just be outside, I don't think, and just paint and then put your painting in the torch. It's like people that have been incarcerated, or they might be outside now, but have been incarcerated with the CRN. I think that they can apply and put their paintings in expos and sell them, and it's good for them. You know, some people don't get money sent in and funds and that, so it helps them. They get a bit of canteen money and a bit of money for when they get out and that, and it's also. I think it's a good headspace for them to start painting and that, and, you know.
Yeah.
But we also, they have a program, Mungadal as well here, which is like to learn about Indigenous
bush tucker.
Oh, yeah, one of the fellas was talking about that earlier.
Foods and plants and all that type of stuff if they want to get around it. But look, really, to tell you the truth, this prison probably isn't the best for it, you know. Like.
Yeah.
Other jails have a lot more, like...
Culture's not very encouraged.
What sort of stuff would you want to see if you could, or you were speaking to someone that kind of makes them decisions?
Look, more, man, I think...
Cultural engagement.
I think a discussion would be a good start.
Look, we don't even have really a good, like... A lot of other prisons have, like, good men's group areas where they can go and kick back and that and
deadly setups.
Talk about fires, stuff and that, and have fires and we're not like that here, you know. It's just we've really got nothing here.
Yeah, we noticed that earlier when we wanted to do the smoking and we went down with a few of the full fellas. Of water. It was full of water, yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's a duck pond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mosquito breeding ground.
Yeah. Yeah. But like stuff like you know, I think if they done like stuff like didgeridoo making. Probably. We're doing it. They're trying to set up a program at the moment. It's called Connecting the Country, where we're going to all get, like, I think it might be 12 permits to leave, and we can go out to country.
Meet a couple of elders.
Back here and that. Meet a couple of elders and have a fire and get around a bit of smoke and talk and do whatever out there, you know. I think it's good just to get out there and just...
Bit of healing.
Just feel the ground, you know.
Do you have any digits here at the prison at all, or...?
I made a didge out of paper mache, so...
Yeah, no, we don't.
And why don't you have didgeridoos here, yidikis?
Look, to tell you the truth, I really don't know. I think it, honestly, I think they might class them as weapons here or something. So,
and that's a sad thing too. You know, these are cultural sacred artifacts that, you know, go thousands and thousands of years old, and
yeah,
to them to deny us practicing our culture, like, that should be against human rights, eh? And it's, yeah, like, used as anyone else has access to Christianity, Islam, should have the same with culture and be able to have your cultural artifacts. And
yeah, of course.
Yep.
Even if it's in the Indigenous room, and they have it in a cupboard that's locked up, and then it's, when you go up there, you hand your card in, you go up there and you can play it or learn it or whatever, that it'd be good like that. But they just, yeah,
it's good where a few of the boys use their creativity, like they were just finding logs, and, you know,
try and make it out of that.
They were making talking sticks, clap sticks, bits of art out of the timber, cutting in half and sanding down.
Well, that's
a little
culture,
bit, you know?
Right there. Culture is a lot, and it seems to be like looked for by the brothers in here. They want to experience it, they want to be a part of it, and they're finding bits of wood on the ground, and they're making do with that.
Yep.
So they're finding their own culture within themselves, which is quite hard to do, but it's beautiful to see as well.
I find it's where the cultural needs aren't being met, the boys will venture out and meet them for themselves.
Can you go into a little bit more? Because there's a few different ways people have been making didges here, eh?
Oh. So some boys out of toilet rolls.
Yeah, toilet rolls.
Go into your process, eh?
They sell Delights here. And
what's a Delight, brother?
Like Delight boxes, the chips.
Oh, yeah.
They're like sour cream and chives and salt and vinegar and whatnot. Ooh. Bought like four or five boxes just to eat the chips, but I had a vision in mind, you know. I'd seen someone do a paper mache dige before, and I knew it was just flour and water. So I ended up getting something printed out, and it's like 2-1, I think it was. Two cups of flour to one cup of water, consistency-wise.
Self-raising or just plain
any
flour?
Any flour. Self-raising, we can put it in the oven. But yeah, so then I was just in there with a paintbrush and making a mad mess. But now it's not finished, but it's... Yeah, just trying to find
and
the motivation.
How does that make you feel in the process, like being able to start it, the thought process, and then putting it into action, grabbing the materials?
Empowered.
Beautiful.
Yes. Empowered, awesome. Yeah. Because I can sit there and try and muck around and play with it and whatnot, but I believe it needs a few more layers to sound like a real didge.
Exactly. And that's deadly too. That's going old ways, eh? It's like, you know, what we have access to is...
Yeah, adapting.
Yeah.
That's our culture, isn't it?
That's the ingenious.
Yeah. Making a didgeridoo out of damper.
Didgeridoo.
You can eat it later.
Yeah. We've got our own gingerbread house.
Yeah.
Start playing, have a bite, and then keep playing.
Hollow out the loaf of bread, you know?
Sounds like, you know... A place that doesn't, you know, present culture or support yous like that, you know, don't really need it. Sounds like this country here is providing it. It's showing you. It's presenting itself to yous. Yous are seeing it, and that's, you know, that connection there. That's a very strong connection. What yous all have here. So don't worry about what they can't provide. Yous already have it.
And he's already got
very, very good
he's
point, very got good point, because it's a feeling that you have inside and you're acting on it.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, it's like the country, you know. Not only are we missing our country, you know, being taken away from it and not getting back to connect with it, but, you know, the country is missing us. It's missing you fellas, okay? It's the same thing. It's not just us, but that country needs us, you know, and that land, you know. When you're out here in the bush, you're more, you know, more in tune with it,
yeah,
and so, you know, so you can actually hear it and you feel it, and you know,
it's one good thing about our culture. We don't need everything.
Yes, it's the oldest
we just
culture.
Need, we just need the ground.
Didgeridoo, yuziki, or bumbo. That's the oldest instrument, wind instrument. It's the oldest instrument in the world. You know, besides our voices and singing, you know, the first instrument we had was like a didgeridoo, bumbo. Besides our boomerangs and clapsticks, you know.
You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And that was a recording from yesterday's Beyond the Bars special at Middleton Prison, where Ty Hammersley, Brent Watkins, Freddie Norris, and Amos Roach honoured 24 years of NAIDOC broadcasting with guests Zach and Brad. And they spoke about the importance of lifting up the younger generation and the realities of accessing cultural needs while incarcerated. Now, every year since 2001, Beyond the Bars brings you the voices of First Nations people across the Victorian prison system during NAIDOC Week. You can hear the full broadcast by going to 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2025. And remember, Beyond the Bars is running all this week, and today's broadcast will be from 11am to 2pm from Margonite Prison. And then on Friday, tune in again from 11am to 2pm to hear voices out of Port Phillip Prison.
And I just want to draw attention to a beautiful exhibition that's happening today from Black Pearl Studio, which is the Mob Creative Studio. It is on today, Thursday the 10th of July, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Bodrigi, which is 245 Johnson Street, Abbotsford. And it features works from over 20 First Nations artists that work at the studio or support the studio. And it's an incredible, big effort. The amount of works that are on display are so special. So definitely come along. It's 2 hours for today at Bodrigi from 6 to 8 p.m. And now we will replay an interview that I had with Kimberly Benjamin yesterday, who is a Yawara, Badi and Kija woman from Rubibi, or so-called Broome, and proudly living and working on country. And she joined me to discuss the directing and making of SBS and NITV shows Our Medicine, as well as episodes of Warm Props. Now, Our Medicine is a six-part series, behind-the-scenes look showcasing Black excellence from across the country following First Nations, medical trailblazers and traditional healers who through their work, care and knowledge are making change and having positive impact on community. And Warm Props is a drama caught between the set life and home life, of what it's like to be, living in Broome, and also what it means to be a First Nations filmmaker. So have a listen to a beautiful interview that we had where we're smiling, we're chatting, and take a listen. Thanks so much, Kimber, for coming on the show.
Yeah, so exciting. Thanks, Inez.
Of course. Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about you and the incredible work that you do?
Yeah, I'm a proud Yawuru, Badi and Gidja woman. So I come from Broome, which is where I'm calling in from at the moment, which is my ancestral country here, Rubibi, in Western Australia. But I spent a bit of time in on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country. So, I feel really grateful for that time spent there. It really changed my life in many different ways, but also nurtured a lot of my thinking around my creativity. So I work as a filmmaker, writer and director, and I work across documentary and scripted now. So scripted is new for me, but very exciting.
What's the step into scriptedness been like?
It's so scary because it's like a whole other beast of work. Like doco is like small and intimate, and everyone's like collaborating in this like small kind of beautiful space, and then you learn about scripted world where it's like triple the size, and everyone's got a job to make, like, one kind of only a few people's visions come to life. Like, mm-hmm. It's strange. Yeah, it really was just like another skill set to learn. And but also very exciting because, we all consume this, TV and film, and, we love. I just love to be able to watch shows that are so relatable, and I'm always like, oh, it'd be so good to watch, to make something like that as well.
For sure.
So, yeah, it's nice to come over to the dark side, as people like
to call it. I mean, even, thinking about your current shows that you've directed of Our Medicine and Warm Props, if we think about, Our Medicine, how has it been to kind of direct it and plan for it, because I imagine you'd have to pick the places that you'd want to go, and do you follow specific events, or just following the communities around and seeing how you go? So what's been the process been like?
When I've come onto the series, Our Medicine season one, a lot of A lot of pre-research has been done by the production team, and there's been an yeah, it's been nice that you can contribute to a sense of building up sort of representation of the show of what you want to be seen, whether that's like a variety of different Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people involved in different medical professions. So like making sure we're representing people across all different spectrums of medicine, whatever that means, and really including our traditional healing as like a priority of that. So yeah, I think a lot of what my role was, which I feel like I was able to contribute to, was really ensuring like the traditional healing side wasn't seen as a add-on to the Western medical side of it, where we're showcasing our mob across all different medical professions, but ensuring our traditional healers are also given that that same sense of yeah, priority in terms of healing and yeah, and really making sure that it was incorporated into the show in a way that didn't feel like it was a token add-on. So yeah, that was exciting. I think it was nice to be able to influence some of those discussions.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I think it was so beautiful to see that it's so much like healing and healthcare in every form of medicine. It doesn't just happen in hospitals, and how much life-saving work mob do across the continent and in communities and in the bush. And it gives, yeah, as you said, like it gives equal importance and time. And were there any moments kind of set outside of the hospital that really stuck with you?
Yeah, I got to one of the stories I was able to bring on to the series was this incredible foundation out in Kununurra, which is on Mirrawoon country in the East Kimberley, and they are a privately owned GP clinic, and they're like one of the first, if maybe the only Aboriginal owned privately owned GP clinic. So but they're based on like a, you know, because they're really based on their foundations are deeply rooted in being in community and providing care in that, yeah, through a really strong First Nations led strength based lens. So it was really cool to spend time with them at Wunan Clinic, and with just such incredible women. It's always the women that are leading the way as well. It's just always. But they. We got to go out on bush on Gidja country actually, and just spend time with some of the elders out there and some of the mob that they're connected to. And it's just so nice to just to like it really is just nice to walk on country and then have someone guide you and say, and just within 5 meters have a plant that's identified that can help with this, and then you know, a meter away, another plant that can help with this. And it's just like it really is like an experience that you really appreciate. Like that's when you're like, this is the strength of country. And yeah, and I don't know, it's just special to have those moments when you're out with people who are deeply connected to their country and deeply committed to passing down, you know, that knowledge and that information. So yeah, it's a small thing, but it just felt really impactful. And it yeah, it's in one of the episodes. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, I think it's like all the small things are so impactful, and having someone like guide you. And I was thinking when you were talking how it is can feel similar to like guiding a shoot or guiding a direction. And I know that even from the very first episode, it shows so much for how much like all First Nations healers like deal with and manage and guide. And I was curious, like, what was some of the challenges for you as well? Because sometimes I can feel a bit squeamish of like, you know, the emergency departments, and
Yeah.
you're dealing with like medical terminology and
bloods and cut and trauma. And yeah, I'm wondering if that was a little bit, I don't know if it's jarring or challenging. I mean, what was it like for you?
100%. I've been like lucky in my life. I haven't had to much interaction, you know. I haven't been in hospitals that much. I've only been in a hospital for a birth or to say goodbye to someone that's passing. And really, like, that's been the extent of my hospital visits. And I was on given the role of directing the Cairns emergency department shoot.
Yeah. And I was that's what I was thinking
about. So scared. And I'm like 100%, I just do not do well with any bodily fluids. Like, I'm not. In the first day of shooting, we had someone come in that had a machete attack to the arm, which is in episode one. And I just couldn't even look at the screen. I couldn't even look. I mean, in those cases, I'm standing next to my camera person.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about the story that is of this, you know, what can this person's story add to the larger narrative of the series? And yeah, but I couldn't even go in close enough to lucky they let us film stuff like that. Like, I often think about the patients and I'm like, they just, people, yeah, they're so generous. But the ED really opens your it really makes you think about how sick people are, because that's the place they go to when, you know, when people are at their most vulnerable and they're most sick. And and then when they need the most care, because they're presenting, you know, in many cases with very ill. And yeah, and it really just kind of affirmed a lot as well, in terms of like how much our mob need safety in those places. And that's one of the things as a filmmaker you just get to experience.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
I think when, like, even like looking at the episodes of seeing entire groups kind of come together and really support people and each other, I can imagine it was somewhat similar as you, like, behind the scenes, because, you know, so often you hear of the statistics and health inequity, but not so much about the celebration of community and care of all of these healing practices. And I think the love and the care is like so prevalent on screen, so I imagine that it's probably similar behind the scenes. But what was it like for the scene, like behind the scenes crew, and like make the show together?
That was such an important part of it as well, is like really making sure we were coming from a very strong strength lens, because and particularly when we're making a show that's called Our Medicine, the title, and it's being broadcast on National Indigenous TV and ITV, it's we're always making the show for our mob firstly. And I often think, like, we're exhausted. We know these statistics exist. We know that our mob have poor health, and we know where it comes from. Like, we know all of that. We live it. We've seen it in our families. We know why. But when you're making a TV show, the thing which annoys me the most is you can't assume everyone knows. So you have to put in a little bit of context to help people. You know, you're really just trying to guide people along gently to have some deeper understanding and some acknowledgement of the health outcomes of our mob, and help them sort of understand that, even if our own mob learns stuff along the way. But really, like you said, we really just want to celebrate the strength of our just like you really do see them as our heroes when you're looking at them rocking up every day, putting on, you know, their paramedic uniforms, or like, you know, yeah, walking in with their scrubs into ED, or like just like you, just such intense environments. It does really make you think, like, we all have a role in, and right now my role was like, I'm a storyteller and you do the life-saving work, you know, that kind of, really reiterates that. But yeah, I'm glad you could see the love and care, because that's a scary part of being a filmmaker, is you're really always wanting to also show that the filmmakers are deeply invested in the participants that are on the screen and in the stories that are told. And on our medicine, we, you know, I got asked to come on it because she's like my big sister, mentor, Carla Hart. She called me up to bring me onto the project, and she was one of the producers and co-directors. And she, yeah, if she tells me to do something, I'll do it. She is just such a guiding light, and also just such, like, I can just rely on her to call her up at any hour and debrief about something, or talk really like openly about representation in the show, and really have like really robust discussions about it. And yeah, we also had one of my like sisters, Shari Hutchison, in as the production manager on the show. So we had these like we three of us that we just felt like we could make a show that we were really proud of.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
There's so much like quiet strength, like even as you said, like you're putting on the uniform every day, you're looking at all the beautiful like plants and the healing medicine, and from what I can like feel as a viewer is like, yeah, the quiet strength and the supportiveness. Were there conversations on set, or you know, with co-directors and production, of like what you want the audience to feel?
Yeah, I think it's we were just really like, I was really committed to being like, we don't just want people to watch the show and think, far out, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people are so sick, you know, like they're so, their health outcomes are really terrible, because it's like, we know that, and that we don't want to make another show that's just just spewing out those facts again, you know, those statistics. And you know, it's the same kind of thing that we all experience, is like, we, you know, you get overloaded with the same story and the same statistics, and you get that fatigue of like, yeah, and I often actually it's just so overwhelming. And for us, like we're just trying to highlight the strength and the fact that there are so many committed First Nations mob working in health that are deeply committed to their expertise. And that's what we just wanted people to know. Like, we are in safe hands, and we are in safe hands when we're with our own mob. And that's the message that I was hoping people would understand and see. You know, really, it really is life-changing for people when they can understand that they are with our own mob, who you don't have to explain the context of your situation, or you can just feel really safe and really like really good that you're going to be looked after.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what I was hoping people would get out of it, and just feel proud. Like, that's the feeling of being proud of Like we, it's just one, it's just a, it's a snippet into this, into this world of medicine that can cover so much, and we can't represent it all, but we can strive to just show a little piece of,
of what sure.
it means.
It me. Really reads like a love letter, and like a big, love letter to how the commitment of so many First Nations health and healers.
That's really nice.
It's true. I know that I was, speaking of the other show that's recently come out of Warm Props, of you've directed a few episodes of that, and I just thought it was so interesting, because I knew that maybe we were gonna have this conversation of how Warm Props is also like a romantic drama about like a chaotic film set.
Yeah.
And then you have Our Medicine, which is like such a like intimate kind of setting as well.
Yeah.
I guess in what ways do you think it's been kind of like similar or different, being on both of these sets?
Yeah, it was. Well, see, Warm Props just allowed us to use like every example of being involved in the film industry as an Aboriginal person, and put that into a funny little web series. So we were like, oh yeah, I've got an example. Oh wow, we have so many examples to choose from. And what we were searching for were like kind of outrageous ones that like, and you know, with drama, it's like you ramp it up, you can make it like funny, you can like make it ridiculous. But deeply, like deep down, like it's really rooted in quite problematic things, which are so relatable for people, other filmmakers, but also just anyone that's a person of color in this country. So we had fun with it, and we it was also Jub Clerc's film, which is, she's another amazing mentor of mine, and she's I call her my auntie Nan, because we're related but we don't know how, so we just say, oh, you're either my auntie or my Nan, so
you're that's my auntie really Nan. Sweet.
And she calls me Auntie Nan back. Anyway, she got me onto the series again. So I'm just so lucky in this, because I've just got these beautiful Black women in my life who have, really, like, you know, I feel like I've connected with them, and then being able to, they brought me along, you know, and that's like, that's how you survive in this industry. Ja brought me onto her series that this is her creation, and then I've been able to add in sort of some of my contributions to it. And to be fair, you know, some of them did, like, you know when we're working on documentaries, we're often working with shooter producers, which are the camera people who come on, and we work with them, and maybe we've only worked with them once before, or like never worked with them before, and often they're like men, and you know, it's just like the realities of being a filmmaker and particularly in WA as well. But yeah, we some examples of from Our Medicine I used on Warm Props, because you just can't escape some of the conversations you find yourself in. Even just explaining like the differences between health equity and health equality, and just having to do like some of the bigger conversations, you know, you're like, it's like the same old story, like you're the director on this shoot, but also you're the cultural consultant, and fielding questions about, you know, why Aboriginal people deserve, you know, scholarships to help them, aid them into being a doctor, or, you know, why, just conversations that you find yourself in that you're like, oh, okay, so yeah, I'm really doing the 101 here while I'm trying to, yeah, facilitate this shoot in a community that I'm connected to. And
yeah,
now I'm working with someone who's like very new or very ignorant, or however we want to
it's frame a it. Dual role. I can imagine.
Yeah, so much.
And I know that lastly, given, you know, you've had so many incredible people supporting you and mentoring you as well, if you could like give advice to any young like mob who are filmmakers or want to get into the industry, is there something that you would like to maybe share with them, or just some advice? And also, where can we watch Our Medicine and Warm Props?
Yeah, so cute to be asked that question when, like, it's really reaffirming for me. I'm like, oh yeah, that's where I'm at in my career. I can provide advice. But no, it's the thing I've learned is, like, you know, you have to find your people. And I mean, the way I did that was just by saying yes to a lot of opportunities at the start, you know, and trying to connect with people and find my place. And then you just, then you just realize, like, you've got this, this group of people around you. And in my case, it's all women. It's all Black women. And then you learn, and you can, like, you really do start to realize how much you can, like, productively gain mentorship from them, you know, because, you know, you often, like, often for young mob as well, like, they're involved in many different, like, mentorship programs, and you just, like, it can be a bit of fluff, but you really do realize, like, how important having mentors are in the industry, because you can go to film school and you can, you know, do sort of training in different ways, but it's like when you actually receive mentorship from people who have been the trailblazers in the industry, it's like, yeah, that's where you're going to learn everything. So yeah, my advice would just be just to try and do as much of that connecting as possible, and yeah, don't make it feel like a chore. It's not, you know, when people are like, you need to network, but
yes, networking.
But yeah, it's just, yeah, I think once you find your place, and yeah, have fun. It's so fun. It's actually, and the thing is, we're like, you know, I'm a part of that next generation that we're trying to, like, safeguard the industry, safeguard it for that next, you know, crew that are coming through. And yeah, and so hopefully it gets easier and easier. And that's, like, yeah, that's what I acknowledge as well on my journey. Like, I've come through at a certain point that has enabled me to, you know, have opportunities that people that before me haven't been able to, get. So,
yeah, amazing. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. You probably can't see me and Kimber smiling the whole time while we're talking about this. But
probably
you could hear it. But yeah, where can listeners watch these really incredible shows?
They're both on SBS On Demand.
Woohoo!
So you can, and SBS is good because it's free. You can sign up. You still have to sign up, but it's free, and it's actually amazing. You jump on there every now and then, and you can just watch the most incredible shows. So
absolutely.
Take a look online.
Yep, and then we'll link it all in our show notes as well. But thank you so much, Kimber, for coming on the show. It's been so incredible to be able to chat to you about your work, these amazing shows, and how important the love letter to First Nations healthcare and healers is, for sure.
Thanks, Inez, and happy NAIDOC week, everyone.
Yeah. Have a good day, Kim. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
And that was my beautiful conversation with Kimberly Benjamin, who is a Yawarra, Badi and Kija woman from Rububi Broome and proudly living and working on country.
And that was a conversation me and Kimber had yesterday about directing and the making of SBS and NITV shows Our Medicine, as well as some episodes of Warm Props. Now, Our Medicine is a six-part series behind-the-scenes look showcasing Black excellence from across the country, following First Nations medical trailblazers and traditional healers who, through their work, care and knowledge, are making change and positive impacts on community. And we spoke about mentorship, you know, healing and medicine in community and hospitals, and the importance of connection, which really ties into marking 50 years of NAIDOC Week and the theme Next Generation. You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, and it is currently 8:15.
Amazing. Thanks, Inez. And what a wonderful conversation. And now we are joined by our final guest for today, Gunai Gunditjmara and Djaburong Senator Lydia Thorpe, who's going to discuss some of the implications of the Yuruk Justice Commission's final reports, as well as Australia's international human rights obligations in relation to Palestine, and hopefully also share some reflections on NAIDOC Week 2025. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, 3CR. Thanks for having me.
Of course. It's always a privilege to have you on, and thank you for making the time to come on community radio. It's really, really appreciated. So I wanted to begin by talking a bit about the Yuruk Justice Commission. Now, last month it handed down its final two reports, Yuruk for Transformation and Yuruk Truth Be Told. And this included the finding of genocide and crimes against humanity committed against Aboriginal people in Victoria as part of colonisation. So can I get your thoughts on the implications of this finding, and particularly with respect to Australia's human rights obligations and Victoria's ongoing treaty negotiations?
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's something I've heard all my life from the famous Uncle Robbie Thorpe, you know, an incredible warrior of our time. And before you know, anybody raised this issue and continue to raise this issue, Uncle Rob has maintained that genocide took place in this country against our people for longer than 50 years. And so to acknowledge his fight, his words, to have a report that was, you know, had input from our old people and Aboriginal people from across the state, who told truth to power, and to come out with a report like that is just incredibly important for not only what we're dealing with today, but for future generations. We know that genocide has happened and continues to happen in the most sophisticated fashion. We know that deaths in custody is out of control in this country, and the assault by the state on our people continues every minute of every day. We know that child removals in this country continues to rise. We have 24,000 of our babies in out-of-home care today. So that number is growing. And we know that the desecration of country is an ongoing fight for our rights to our land. It is our birthright to our country. And without our land, who are we? So genocide continues, and the state facilitates this genocide. And the Yuruk report and the commission have done an incredible job. And I just want to, you know, shout out to those people involved in that, particularly Auntie Eleanor Burke and Brother Boy Travis, who led the Walk for Truth. They've shown incredible bravery to come out, and we know that there were, you know, internal discussions around the word genocide, because it is hard for people to understand what genocide really is, and some people are frightened of the word genocide, but we have to call it for what it is, and it's genocide. So truth-telling is important. It's part of our healing in this country. It's a way we can mature as a nation. We just have to tell the truth. We tell the kids to tell the truth. We just need the government to grow up and tell the truth as well. And Europe has shown the way for the rest of this country to follow suit on what we can be doing.
Yeah, and I think what you said there about how the fight, you know, acknowledging Uncle Robbie Thorpe is much longer than just what's been encapsulated in the Uruk Commission, but that the Uruk's Commission is so vitally important in documenting this, in collecting testimonies and really putting this truth on the record. And, you know, you mentioned the importance of governments here telling truth. And on that, I wanted to turn to Palestine and ask about the recently released report From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide, which was authored by Francesca Albanese, who's the special rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territories, and wanted to get your thoughts on Australia's responsibilities and complicities here, including the role of the Australian private sector in arming Israel.
Well, you know, thank goodness for the real Albanese on this planet, and that's Francesca. What an incredible woman, staunch woman she is, and telling truth across the globe on what is going on in Palestine. What is happening in Palestine is clearly genocide and colonization of Palestine. And we know that this country is completely complicit in enabling this ongoing genocide against Palestinians. We know from this report that profit by private corporations is driving this genocide. And you know, some of these private corporations are being publicly funded, which ensures or which maintains the complicity of the government. The government are funding corporations that are funding a genocide, then hello, that is being complicit. So this report is important for everybody in this country to understand in exactly how so-called Oz is aiding and abetting in the genocide of Palestinians. We know that these corporations that are supported by government play a key role in the dispossession of not only our people, but Palestinians through extraction of resources. And we know that the stolen wealth through genocide is fueling the genocide. We've seen in this report that private companies like weapons companies and mining companies, banks, pension funds, insurers, universities. Hello, we knew universities had something to do with it when they start shutting down their own students for calling out genocide, and tech firms. So we are still going through the report. It doesn't actually name a number, you know, a lot of Australian companies, but we know from submitters into this report that they have definitely named these companies, and we'll be calling those companies out. We know Glencore is certainly one of them, and Glencore continue to destroy our land here as well as fuel a genocide in Palestine. So, you know, we as a country and around the world called out, called for the end of apartheid in South Africa. So we need to do the same collective action here to end Israel's apartheid and genocide in Palestine. So, yeah, the report is damning of the complicity in genocide in Palestine, and we'll be continuing to call out those companies. As soon as we find out who they are, we will call them out and we will continue to call out anyone else or any other company that is complicit in aiding and abetting in this genocide.
And the connections that you've drawn there between, you know, the spoils of genocide and dispossession here, funding a genocide and the dispossession of the Palestinian people, are so important to bear in mind that, you know, there are anti-colonial solidarities between Aboriginal people and Palestinians, but there are also colonial states solidarities between Australia and Israel. And just to wrap up, it is NAIDOC week as we're talking now, and I wanted to know if you wanted to share any messages or reflections for NAIDOC week, and especially on this year's theme, which is the next generation.
Well, you know, it's hard not to say happy NAIDOC week, but at the same time, we have to remember the origins of NAIDOC. NAIDOC came from a day of protest on the 26th of January 1938. We've had two deaths in custody in the past 8 days. So, the you know, the boot is on our neck. Even though it's NAIDOC week, we continue to, you know, have deaths in custody and have our people killed by this system that has morning teas to say happy NAIDOC. So I don't want to put a dampener on it, but if we want a future generation, we need to stand up now and we need to continue what our old people called for, and that is a day of mourning in this country to acknowledge the frontier wars, but also all of our people who've died and continue to die at the hands of the system. So happy NAIDOC week, but don't forget who we are and where we come from, and we need all of our allies to get out there and support us in stopping this ongoing genocide here also.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you making the time to join us, Senator Thorpe.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that was Senator Lydia Thorpe, Gunai Gunatjmara and Jabirung woman, who joined us to discuss implications of the Yuruk Justice Commission's final reports and finding of genocide, as well as Australia's international human rights obligations in relation to Palestine, and also share a few reflections on NAIDOC Week 2025. Now, that is about all we've got time for today, but we might take you through a quick recap of what we discussed. So first up, you heard a speech by Mananjali and South Sea Islander health worker and researcher Chelsea Watego at the Mugindjin rally on June 9th, demanding justice for Kumanjayi White.
And then we heard from Beyond the Bars at Middleton Prison, where they spoke about the importance of accessing cultural needs while incarcerated. And you can continue to listen to Beyond the Bars on 3cr.org.au. And then I spoke to Kimberly Benjamin, who is a Yawara, Badi and Kija woman, about filmmaking for Our Medicine, as well as Warm Props.
And again, finally, we were joined by Senator Lydia Thorpe to talk about genocide here and in Palestine and share some reflections on NAIDOC Week 2025. And a reminder that Beyond the Bars is airing across NAIDOC Week from the 7th to the 11th of July. So today we are heading out to Marguerite Prison, and the broadcast is from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then tomorrow is the broadcast out of Port Phillip Prison, again from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. You've been listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 a.m. Thank you so much for your company. Happy NAIDOC week. Stay in touch with the fight, and we will be back to you next week.
Bye.
We're talking about ecological thinning and subsidised logging, but we basically mean the same things, don't we, here?
Wherever there are chemical corporations around the world, they're constantly trying to chip away at regulations.
Earth Matters, bringing you environmental and social justice stories from developments in government and industry to the campaigns and communities that are standing up to them. Earth Matters plays at 11 a.m. Sunday and 6:30 a.m. Wednesday. Turn your dial to 855 a.m. or listen online at 3cr.org.au.
While the headlines have subsided, the nuclear power plant is still not under control, with the spent fuel rods removed from only one out of four reactors.
Law needs to change so that our rights can be recognised, so that decisions in relation to the use and exploitation...
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find NIBS opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at NIBS.